Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And as always, I have a question for you. Have you noticed how we all speak of truth as if we possess it? But what happens if what we think is true isn't actually the truth? In today's podcast and post, we dive deeper into the framework that I shared last week with a look at our truth assumptions. I'll share how psychology, science, and religion haven't been so helpful. Join me now as I take you to ground zero for personal transformation, and if you truly desire lasting change, you don't want to miss today's episode. Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for coming back to yet another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I am your host. My name is Kevin Winder, and I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and coach, among many other things I do in the world. Just like you, we all wear many hats. We're all multidimensional. I say that every time because it's true. I've been saying it for years. I hope it's part of your truth now. Folks, we are going to take a little detour. I wasn't going to take the next few weeks and do what I'm going to do, but I decided to because last week's post generated more response than the entire series that I offered prior on the I Am series. I think that might have something to do with the fact that this is the beginning of the year and everybody's trying to get a good start. They want to see changes affect. They realize that they've kind of let things go. Things are out of control. They feel insecure. They feel like they could be doing better in life financially or health-wise or some other way. And you're taking strides to have change. I applaud that. I celebrate that for you. And what I'm going to do today is we're going to do a deeper dive over the next 4 weeks into this framework that I introduced last week. This framework comes from my book. It's essentially my PhD thesis on human transformation and why we do the things we do or don't do the things we say we're going to do. And it's the architecture behind them. It differs from the architecture given to us by science and most of religion, and as well as psychology. So this means that personal change is not necessarily something you need to go have therapy for. Sometimes maybe that's appropriate. Personal change isn't something that just happens when you decide, okay, I'm going to get religion now. I'm going to start becoming a better person according to religion. And it's tact. Science is not something that can help you because you're more than your own biology. And science doesn't have any claim towards the depth dimension of your life. And so we're going to talk a little bit about all this stuff. And if you remember last week, we talked about this 5-minute life hack, which I called contemplation. We're going to revisit that today. And if you can come with me into a sacred space, into a place where you are truly thinking about these things, feeling these things, considering these things, you are going to finish this episode with tremendous gratitude that you stuck with it. So I invite you to be present. I invite you to find stillness and see where this takes you. Secondarily, I am taking the advice of some of the people that have told me, so I'm recording this. If you're listening to this on the podcast, which most all of you do, I now have what I call the Clophis Cam, which is basically my iPhone set up in my tiny little Clophis, which is my recording studio in the closet of my office. It's been that way for the last decade, and I've invited you into it. So if you want to check it out, go to YouTube, and you can find me there along with the three other people who are watching this on YouTube. Now, let's get back to today's podcast. It's 528th episode, or the 528th episode. I call it Competing Truth Claims, and let's get started. So last week's podcast, as I shared, we revisited the framework from my book, Getting Better When You Can't. And due to the volume of feedback and to support your engagement for lasting transformation, we're going to go deeper into this framework, which I have pictured in my blog post, thriveinexile.com. It will also be in the newsletter. So if you don't subscribe to Winder's Windshield, I invite you to go to kevinwinder.com. Remember, I spell my name like the number 7. You'll get a copy of it there. You'll see it where you can follow the visual representation of this framework. This is the architecture of your human behavior. If you want a copy, just reach out to me. You can always reach me on my website. It's also posted on my website. So there's a lot of places you can access it. If you're just listening to the podcast, just tune in to kevinwinder.com. It's there, and we'll be working on it. But it's basically a ladder structure, and at the bottom is the first rung or step is your truth claim or truth assumption, and that's where we're going to spend our time today. Okay. Now, I'd like to start off by saying, first of all, that you're here and you're interested because you want to change something. You have a sin, a problem, an addiction, a weakness, a temptation, a compulsion, a habit, something about you know could be better, and you've tried to change it probably and haven't been successful, and you're here today to reconsider it. Maybe you're going to get a better start. Let me just start by saying I believe your transformation is truly starting today. Transformation is different than change, because if you remember last week, when you change, you just change back. If you really want to keep the change, you have to understand the architecture of how God has designed us and why we do the things we do. And there are some nuances to all of this, and I'm going to share them with you while I ask you to sit kind of presently, sit engaged, sit humbly, a humble inner posture, and be receptive. Okay. If you notice yourself kind of pushing back, arguing, defending, just notice it. Don't go with it. Just catch yourself in the act, and then try and warm your hands to the fire that I'm offering, and just see where this journey takes you. But you're here because you want change, and you probably already know that change is not easy. Change doesn't just happen. You can't just say, okay, from now on, no more sugar. And then you just never feel like at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you want a bunch of Oreos or whatever, like I do. Okay. But I want to speak specifically to you who feels like change just feels impossible. I want to speak to the person who feels like I have tried to change this so many times and I am a failure. Every diet I go on, I go back off. Every time I try and make this behavioral change, I fail. And so I really want to call something really important to your attention. And there are 3 points. The first one, with regard to the change that never seems to change. Transformation is often gradual. You may be expecting the change to be like a light switch where you just go from on to off, or from off to on. Like all of a sudden, if I were to change, I would suddenly be motivated. I would suddenly be disciplined. Okay? Just as changing from a child to an adult was gradual. It was but you had a transformation. You're not a child. You're an adult. In the same way, your spiritual progress will be gradual. So, the second point here is you're not alone. Okay, if you feel like a flunky, a failure, a sinner that just can't get it right, I really want you to hear this, especially if you come from a religious framework that has hurt you because of this behavior. You know it's wrong. You're trying to change it, but you go back to it over and over again. Let me just help you understand something. You're not alone. Every single person you've ever met, everybody in your church, everybody on the street, everybody at your office, struggles with something that they can't seem to change. That if they were to bring this secret to the forefront, they would also have to admit, I'm a failure and I suck. Okay? This is not the case. Okay? I want you to hear this. The Puritans called these sins, these inability to change, they called them besetting sins. These are sins that you don't just walk away from, okay? Maybe your anger issues, your temper is something you know you want to change, but every time you try and change it, it fails. Maybe it's an addiction. Maybe it's something else. I'm showing you now, there is a place in the sanctity of your own mind where healing is possible. But you have to first understand that this is gradual and that it may be there by design. This is the part three. From a spiritual perspective, these besetting sins, these problems that you keep coming back to, they serve a purpose of growth and keeping us humble. Okay? Growth and humility go together. Transformation is gradual. And these are the design. If it's the design for your life, then you will struggle with it. Okay? The Apostle Paul could not experience freedom from his besetting sin, his what he called thorn in the side that he went to God many, many times asking God, please remove this. And God said, my grace is sufficient. This is in 2 Corinthians 12. In Romans chapter 7, Paul reveals that sometimes God is more glorified by our struggle with sin than he is the removal of our sin. So for those of you who are in the religious framework, this is where religion hasn't been so helpful, because it has told us that Jesus paid the price for our sin, which he did, and that he removes our sin, which he doesn't. Not right now. He definitely removes us from the consequences of our sin. But he doesn't remove you from sin. There are no sinless Christians. There are no sinless Christ followers. There are no sinless religious people. Just people who are battling. Okay? And so the struggle is the design. And so if you've ever asked God for something amazing, if you felt deep in your heart, like, I know I can do more with my life, just know that that bigger desire is true and real. But it also comes with a teacher, a temper, a thorn in your side, a besetting sin that is there to teach you something about yourself to get you to the bigger place. So all of that to say, even Paul realized this and shared in Romans 7, I'd have the desire to do what is right, but I do not have the ability to carry it out. For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want is what I keep on doing. Okay? So if you feel like that, you're not alone. You are in good company. You are not, you know, give yourself some grace, please. Do not be so hard on yourself. Do not take religion's hammer and beat yourself over the head with it, please. Like, you are not a failure. You are not a loser. There is no need for you to fear a fiery retribution of God because you cannot change this. Right? If you feel like you cannot change it, it just means more work and discovery is before you. See, God doesn't work like that. He doesn't just give you this thing and that it's a problem and then condemn you forever because of it. That would be cruel, and everybody who makes that observation is correct. That seems wrong, and it would be wrong. God doesn't work that way. These struggles are the design. These are not your identity. These are not derailments to your life, although you can feel that they are, and this is the insight that comes. They feel like derailing, but they're the training environment so that you can be in your life. Now, this is really necessary because this is like what Isaac the Syrian said. He called these things the scourge of love. And one thing that the Puritans came out with when they were talking about besetting sins, one of that I've read many books from, his name is Thomas Brooks. He said this. He said, God will gladly pardon you for the sins for which he does not remove. Okay? So do not place this into a win-lose category. You are absolutely going to fail again and again and again and again. But there isn't winning and losing. There is winning and learning. Okay? Give yourself some grace, please. Now you're set to hear the healing. All right? Don't focus on the removal of this problem, but be present to what the problem reveals to you. Okay? Now, go back to last week. The 5-minute life hack, which I call contemplation, is not really anything new. It's been around for centuries. Jesus himself practiced contemplation. He went up on the hillside to the quiet, to the stillness, to the nature, to be with his heavenly Father. And you can do the same. In the morning, you can give yourself 5 minutes. Please don't scroll until this 5 minutes or more has happened. Please. Practice sitting still. God accompanies our silence, which isn't silent. It's not that there's not a nothing there, right? It's a something. It's a someone. And you're simply sitting still before, humbly present before. Now, go back to last week's question. When you think of this thing that you're hoping to change, who says you have a problem? Who says you have a problem? You want to lose weight, you've always tried to, but who says that being overweight's a problem? Should you just accept body positivity, even though it may be at risk to your health? No. Okay, so you know something is the problem, but you're going to identify deeper what's behind it. That's today's work. The work of contemplation is where you're going to uncover this. It's not 10 years of therapy on a couch paying somebody $150 an hour who has daddy issues to walk you through this. Now, just quietly reflect on the question, who says you have a problem? Who's pressuring you to lose weight? Where's this pressure, this impulse coming to get in shape? I mean, obviously, if you're out of shape, you have a stronger impulse to not be in shape. So where's this impulse for good coming? Where's this impulse to avoid being lazy or get on a budget and get out of debt? Are you that authority? Now, if you're sitting there answering me and you're saying, well, I say so. It's just something I want for myself. I question that. I don't think it's you. Okay? Because change is forced upon you. Perhaps maybe your medical provider said, look, if you don't lose weight and get your blood chemistry back in order, you're a ticking time bomb. Now, I'm not an overweight person, but my blood chemistry is as though I am. So I have to make dietary changes lately to try and bring my cholesterol down, to try and keep blood pressure in check, right? And it's not always easy because, like I shared before, I'm a sugar addict, okay? Now, as you're sitting upon all this, try and reflect and accept the deeper truth assumption. Do you see it below the surface? Like, if you think you want this thing, why do you want this thing? Who says you need that thing? It's not really you. That's my point. Now, what is it that you absolutely believe is true about that thing you wish to seek change for? Right? What is true about it? What is true about being in shape that makes you want it? What is true about not being in shape that makes you not want it? Okay? This area of contemplation is kind of the deep dive into the truth assumption that lies below the surface. And I hope that you can kind of get some of the gist of what I'm saying. Here's where you learn to ask, is this all that is true? The reason I ask you to identify what is true about this, I need you to understand, is that all that is true about that? Like, where have I failed to live in fidelity to this truth. In other words, if I know that eating right and exercise is what is best for health, and I truly believe that, why have I rejected the truth? If I know that sticking to a budget and spending less than I make is healthy and true, why have I rejected the truth about a budget? Okay? This goes for all of our problems. Now, there's a reason why I'm asking you to do that, because if you remember last week, I said all problems are really just truth problems. I'm going to go deeper into that. A truth problem is that you don't know what's true. Maybe you never heard that donuts, a diet of donuts and soda pop, is unhealthy. And now you know. Maybe you've never heard, I need to exercise. But now you know, right? So it's a truth problem in the fact that you've either not apprehended it or you haven't applied it. But this is really more about why you haven't applied it, isn't it? This is a repetitive truth. This is something that you've tried to move in conformity to the truth to, but have failed. So you know it's the truth, but you've rejected it. And why? This is going to help you get deeper, right? We have to get below the surface. This is why so many efforts at change fail and turn into changing back, not change, not transformation. The answer, folks, remember, we're humbly receptive in our quietness before our Maker. So the answer does not come from you. It comes from God. If you think that voice inside of you is you, you're mistaken. The voice inside of you is the one that said, let's do what my appetite said. The voice that says, do a opposite of your appetite. Control your appetites for love, sex, food, drug, alcohol, power, ego, right? All of those things, if you just give into that voice, you're going to give into yourself. The thing that makes you override that appetite is not you. It's your Maker loving you in the tension of your own issue. And he reveals something here called moral culpability. In other words, you've known the truth just as I have, and you've rejected it. You've spat in God's face, so to speak. Now, that's an uncomfortable vision. And some of you are really uncomfortable with this whole idea that sitting still is sitting before God, but it is. And I'm not going to mince words and try and just tell you you're meditating to get in your own mind. I don't believe all that actually works this way. This is why some of these spiritual practices don't help you. They mislead you and they tell you that you're better than you actually are. True contemplation reveals, like I showed you, that you're far worse than you ultimately realize and far more loved than you can possibly imagine at the same time. Okay, so please do not squirm. If your mind is being dismissive in this moment, just recognize it and try and sit with the uncomfortable reality that you are rejecting the truth. Now, if you can own it, your transformation is right around the corner. If you can truly own that I have rejected the truth that I know is there, I have been given the truth, I have been shown the way, but I have not lived in fidelity to it. Now you're getting somewhere, okay? Now, if you insist in this moment that you're just talking to yourself, then your problem is solved, okay? For those of you who are like, I don't believe in God, and I believe that I am that higher voice, then guess what? You are healed. All you have to do is say that you don't have a problem because you're the voice of authority. You can just body positivity yourself into perfect health and do it however you want. You can have all the sex you want. You can have all the pride you want. You can have all the power that you can maintain. You can have all the junk food and drug and alcohol because you determine if it's a problem. And all you have to do to be cured is determine it's not a problem. Congratulations. Call me when that doesn't work for you. I know there's a little sarcasm in that, because this is the sobering moment where you actually have to own the fact that it's not so much you in charge. See, the silence is not empty, folks. It's not a nothing in there, like I said earlier. Do not fear this, okay? I'm not taking you into a religion. I wouldn't do that to you. I'm taking you into the sanctity of your own mind in the place where you and your Maker are connected and joined forever. It's how you reconnect to your Maker in the present moment, in the presence. It's a humble surrender to each moment. So let me share with you why psychology doesn't work, okay? Psychology can, with the right gifted therapist, it can take you here. Psychology comes from the Greek word psuche, which means soul. So if the psychologist has a soul and a spiritual awareness, they are gifted. They can take you to this place of discovery. Most therapists are not that person. Okay. Let's take an example that we see in our society, gender dysmorphia. Okay, I'm not picking on trans people or your struggle and making light of any of that. So please don't misconstrue this. I just want to show you as an example what psychology does. Gender dysmorphia is 1/10 the incidence of schizophrenia. Like schizophrenia is 10 times more common than gender dysmorphia. There are no efforts in schools and community and grassroots to normalize schizophrenia. However, psychology's truth claim, which is, if you don't know, it's called tabula rosa, and blank slate. It thinks you start as a blank slate, and then your parents and society and environment screw you up and give you pain, and then you live in trauma, and those create your problems. So they just take you back to the trauma. That's the whole philosophy. That's the whole truth claim. But does such discovery actually alter future behavior? Oh, I realize that my anger problem comes from my dad who had an anger problem. Okay, now, does that change it? Do you still have your anger problem? Of course, you still have your anger problem, so now you have to sign up for another year of therapy to try and come up with some creative ways to let your anger out. Psychology just redefines mental illness. Gender dysmorphia in the DSM-3 or 4 was a mental illness. Now it's normal. It's not an illness. All they focus on now is not that you have a problem. It just focuses on the struggle for the patient who has this condition, which is normal, right? You have to be really careful about that. If you have a problem and you know it deep down, that means you know you're living inconsistency with the truth, which is another way of saying you know you're not right with God. Now, if psychology says, oh, no, you are right, you're totally fine, and you don't have to change, then that's how psychology messes you up, okay? It doesn't help us in that sense. Now, science doesn't help us is it has no rational claim to the depth dimension. Like, there is no empirical evidence for this thing that we're talking about. But that doesn't mean it's not real. Like, science knows that there are things that are not empirically measurable that are necessarily real. Otherwise, science could never use mathematics. You cannot empirically measure the number 2 or tell me how heavy 7 is or any of those things. There's no empiricism to mathematics, but mathematics is a prerequisite to all empiricism. And so it's inconsistent. Science is always inconsistent when it claims that there's something deeper, more powerful, but then it turns around and says, no, there isn't such a thing because we can't measure, and there can't be a God, and there can't be things like God, and there aren't special spiritual dimensions. There's just this dimension of matter and motion. So if you uphold a scientific or medical philosophy and you're trying to change your problem, all they can do is reduce your problem to the smallest biochemical reaction. That's as small as they can get. So basically, they're going to say your problem is really biochemistry. Now, the reason you're depressed is that you need more of the happy biochemistry in your body. So here, take this drug. Oh, the reason you have anxiety is, oh, you have too much of this other biochemistry in your body. So here, take this drug and we'll mellow some of that out. This is not a cure to your problem, folks. And none of this helps you understand how you got that biochemistry in the first place. But this depth dimension does. So science and medicine, while they can be helpful in their place, I'm not a science detractor. I can just tell you you'll be changing and then you're going to change back, okay? Now, if you're on a therapy, don't quit it. Talk to your therapist and get the help you need. Please don't just stop. And then lastly, I want to just show you why religion isn't always helpful. Yes, this teaching does come from a religious framework. It does come from the Christian tradition, but that's more biblical tradition, not Christian religion. Religion, just like Christianity, all religions have a justifiable moral claim. All religions get to this morality that is incumbent upon us. But they also bring with them a kind of carrot and a stick for moral behavior and compliance. And you know what I mean, especially if you've lived there. They threaten hell if you are naughty. They promise bliss, eternity, heaven, paradise if you're good and you're one of the big subscribers and you're the best. But Christianity, Christ following, doesn't do any of that stuff. It is not merit-based. Christ loves us while we are still sinners. This is the scripture, right? And while we are still sinners, incapable of being better, he died for us with a free gift of grace. He's changed this dynamic of retribution, where God is going to get even, to restoration, which means God is fully committed to the restoration of every soul that has ever lived. And there's a plan for that. And guess what? You're in that plan right now. You see, religious communities are full of untransformed people who pretend to be transformed. This is the hypocrisy that almost everyone runs into, good, bad, or ugly. It's not just religious institutions. It's every institution. It's the same way at work. It's the same way at politics. It's the same way at the PTA. No matter where you go, you have hypocrisy because you have people. Religions are not just hypocritical. It's the people that make all religion hypocritical. So just because God says it's a problem is helpful, but that doesn't mean that you comply. In fact, I would argue that true healing does not begin until we are fully convinced that God has spoken and we are aware of how we have deliberately disobeyed. In other words, until you read yourself into the Garden of Eden, where God said, don't eat of the tree, and then you're like, no, I'm eating of that tree. Like, if you don't have a life experience which shows yourself literally blatantly disobeying God, you will not see the curse in your life. You will not recognize the design of redemption, which the whole book is about. Folks, you are not that good. You have spat in God's face just as I have. And when you see it, now your healing is closer than ever. So if your practice of contemplation, you see all this, you see your own struggle, please don't focus on the struggle. This is the hard part. You want to focus on your struggle. You think your struggle needs attention so that you can see the change you want to see. But don't focus on anything. Like, there is no pretending here. There's no hiding here. Just be beloved imperfection. That's what you are. Beloved imperfection. Like, now, I hear these preachers saying all the time, well, God does not love the sinner. He hates the sinner in his sin. But that's not true. Okay? You are perfect imperfection. Now, perfect here, teleos, is that word, authentic. You just need to be real in your sinfulness. You just need to realize that in your imperfection, you have integrity. You recognize, I'm not perfect. The person who says, listen, I am not perfect, is so much closer than the person who says, I'm better than you because I did this religious thing. So now you can see quite easily, at least I hope, that your weight problems are really just truth assumptions which claim I'm not responsible for healthy choices. Think about this. Your truth claim is an assumption that the food I eat is actually healthier than it really is. Oh, I don't eat that much. I don't eat that much sugar. I choose healthy food, right? I don't know why. I work out a lot. You know, people, they may go to the gym a lot, but do they work out? Do they, you know, you have to get to this, right? Debt problems are the truth assumption which claim I'm not responsible for a budget. Of course, you know darn well that if you spend more than you make, you're going to have financial problems. Is the problem the government? Is it the problem the economy? Is the problem your job? Is the problem you can blame a million different things, but in reality, it's saying I'm not responsible for a budget. I'm not responsible for my earning, and I'm not responsible for my spending. I'm a victim. Emotional problems, if you're kind of up and down and anxious and depressed and all this kind of stuff, these are just truth assumptions which claim I'm not responsible for my feelings. You grew up being told that your feelings are valuable and validated, and that's who you are, and that's you can express yourself. You shouldn't be forced to not feel that or deal with. You should have free flowing feelings. Now you have emotional problems. Go figure. A porn problem is the truth assumption which claims I'm not responsible for my sexual responses. This is why you have all kinds of sexual addictions and problems and people going way off the reservation. I'm not responsible for that. There's nothing wrong with that. You're free to be whoever you want and do whatever you want. Or maybe your truth assumption is that this doesn't hurt anybody. Okay? This is just normal. This is being a man. This is being a woman. This is just part of humanity. You're minimizing it. You're doing something. You're rewriting the truth claim to your own standard. An anger problem is a truth assumption which claims I'm not responsible for getting set off. This is how I am, and I'm not in control. I'm not responsible, right? Drinking problems are truth assumptions which say, I'm not responsible right now. Once I've had a drink, I don't have to be responsible anymore. I'm a victim. Remember, AA told me this is my identity. AA said, I'm an alcoholic. And I need to start every meeting with, I'm an alcoholic. That's who I am. It's just who I am. So I can't drink. No, you could be a Sam Malone and work at a bar and never touch a drink. You could actually have one drink and never touch another. Yes, I get the biochemistry, and I don't recommend you go out and test it if you're highly addicted. But what you're telling yourself isn't the truth. Your solution is just another lie that's not true. Don't you want transformation? That's my point. I want you to see how in all these situations, our self-pity precedes acting responsible. Like there's a little voice inside your head, a little message that says, I deserve this. Man, I've worked so hard. I can't do this event sober. I have to act out right now. I deserve it. I need this. I need to buy this thing, even though I shouldn't. I'm impulsive, right? Because this situation is different. This is all your self-pity restructuring reality. You are lying to yourself, and you're following a voice that's not the truth. Self-pity pauses our transformation. I'll say it again. Self-pity pauses transformation. Responsibility restores it. Okay? So all of this exists within the 5 minutes of silent contemplation, folks. Take all your thoughts captive, like the Apostle Paul admonishes us. Keep returning to your humble, receptive presence, the presence of God. And once you learn to join this ongoing sacred place, you can return as often as you desire, for returning will just grow you. You can come any time of the day or night. You can find this sacred moment, and you begin to learn to live from this moment instead of trying to live as a way to get to heaven one day when you die by overcoming your naughtiness, you just live from heaven now. At first, if you just resist this idea, just remember, like, Jesus had some really helpful words about this inside stuff. Your problem isn't out there. Your problem isn't with sugar and Oreos. Your problem isn't alcohol. It's not the ladies. It's not power. It's not your money. Listen to what Jesus said. He said, "Then are you also without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from the outside cannot defile them? But within, out of the heart, the cardia, the inner self of humanity, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness." All of these things, the whole junk drawer of human problems, come from within. These are what defile a person. That's the most transformative, most wise words you've ever heard with regard to your problem. There's nothing out in the world that is causing you to be the way you are. Everything is from within. Okay? So keep practicing the practice. Start with 5 minutes of silence, of wordless prayer, and expand to 10 if you want. If you feel the need for longer silence, please go deeper. Stay still as long as you can. But you don't make a big ritual out. Don't make a goal of, I'm going to meditate for an hour. Don't do that. 3 minutes would be a wonderful gift to you, your life, and the world if you could do it. And once you acknowledge the presence of God, the stillness, the humble posture of just being, then let your words come. You're going to feel words that you want to say to your maker. It might be pain. You might be angry. You might be mad. You might be hurt. You might be desperate. You might be begging. You might have whatever it is. You're going to feel it. You are free. Please say it. Let this self-discovery come forth and go to God. There is now no condemnation for those of you who are in Christ Jesus. And this is, folks, where you exist. You are in Christ in contemplation. There is no other means by which we get to God. It's always Christ. Always has been for every world religion. And for every single soul that has ever had an experience with God, it was always Christ who brought you that. That's what that means. And now you're free to express yourself, whatever it is. Just begin pouring out your heart in that space. You watch what happens. I'm telling you, you will begin to agree with God. You're experiencing transformation the moment that happens throughout your whole being. You'll feel this. You'll feel a complete release. You'll feel a complete healing, a complete new perspective emerging from within. And that is from the place from which you will begin to learn. In the coming weeks, I'm going to show you how to harness that and change it. And while you might not be complete yet, while your transformation is still not fully baked, it is in the oven. And you will know for certain that you've begun. So folks, in closing, keep returning to your source. Return to that silence, please. And you will not recognize your life within a year. God bless you as you contemplate these things.